Apparently, Paxton has a giant maple leaf tattoo.
And welcome to episode 131 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell of Baseball Prospectus. Brett Sayre and Mike Gianella are off this week, and joining me to discuss James Paxton, hashtag Big Maple, is my guest for the week. I'm going to pull up your title here so I get it correctly. He is a writer and director of social media for Baseball HQ. He writes the Factor Flukes columns. He's one of my favorites. You can follow him on Twitter at RyanBHQ. It's Ryan Bloomfield. What's going on, buddy?
Oh, all kinds of stuff, man, but lots of baseball is going on, so that is a good thing.
We were just talking about the Diamondbacks and Nationals game, and the crazy thing this year, I don't know if you saw it, and this is how I'll start our conversation tonight. We're going to get to the fantasy stuff, I promise people, but this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart right now, and Ben Lindbergh tweeted it out on Sunday. The fewest plate appearances per home run in any full season was 2016, the 32.9 plate appearances per home run. This year so far, it's 32.4, and home run rates typically rise after April. So it feels like to me that we're just seeing an unprecedented amount of home runs this year. Is that a fair statement?
That's a very fair statement, and it looks like even more. I think even more fly balls than ever too. At least in April, it's crazy. I thought last year was a spike, but that spike keeps spiking.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote about the surge. I know a lot of other people have in terms of the home run surge, but how do you adjust to this as a fantasy owner? Because I find myself constantly looking at home run totals for players and just going, like, and Adam Duvall is sort of the example that, like, the heuristic for this for me, that, like, he's a sub-300 OBP guy who's going to hit 30 home runs, and, like, I just don't think it matters. Like, there's so many guys who are doing that it's not valuable anymore. Do you feel that way about home runs as well?
I do. I mean, there's these guys like Duvall almost are like a dime a dozen. Hey, Randall Grichuk's another example of that. Even like Mark Trumbo, right, who last year hit, 47 home runs, led the league. For fantasy aspect, he only earned, like, in the low 20s to hit 47 home runs. Yeah, he hit 256 with that. But it's just trying to recalibrate to all this quickly is just insane.
I want to talk about James Paxton. All right, let's talk about Big Maple. You ready?
Our boy.
Well, he's a lot of people's boy. That's kind of the running joke. All right, so to put a little bit of context in here, this is how Ryan and I really, I think, became friends. All right, was we bonded over James Paxton, which is like the most Canadian thing ever, I think, in a way. But, you know, Paxton last year, okay, he showed up in AAA. He got healthy, and he started throwing 100 from the left side. And this was like May, June-ish, in that range.
Mm-hmm, yep.
And when he started doing that, we took notice, and we were among the people writing about him. It wasn't just us. I think a lot of people were writing about Paxton. And then he came up, and he had some success in the major leagues, and he was just kind of such an obvious, you can call him a breakout or a sleeper, whatever you want, but he just seemed so obvious to me last summer.
Yeah, it was kind of obvious, and the cool thing is, and why I love just seeing Paxton doing what he's doing, is really the reason why, you know, I'm so interested in the game here. You get to look at not only just, you know, surface numbers, ERA, obviously going a lot deeper than that, strikeouts, walks, but to really dive in and look at a pitcher and just see what he's doing, either approach-wise, velocity-wise. There's so many different ways to view what a pitcher's doing and adjusting all the time. And just like you mentioned, man, last year Paxton picked up that velocity, which is a fantastic indicator of better things to come. And also started throwing a cutter a little bit more in the second half, and those results were coming through. And it's just cool to see, you know, when you look that deep at those indicators and have someone come through like that. It's, you kind of want to pat yourself on the back, even though, like you said, everyone kind of saw it coming. And it's crazy to me that it was funny. We were all over Paxton kind of in the second half last year. And this came up a couple times heading into the season, and we've talked about it, but Paxton turned into such a helium guy.
Yeah.
Entering the season where like everybody was on this guy, and you know, what do you do about that entering auctions and drafts? It was interesting to see his price skyrocket.
Yeah, like we loved him coming out of last season, and then everybody wrote their sleeper column on him, and then all of a sudden it became, well, how much am I willing to quote unquote overpay on a guy that I feel pretty confident in will pitch well? And you're referencing a lot of conversations we had on Twitter, and like that's a really boring discussion for anyone listening to this podcast, right? Like our Twitter feeds. But there was a lot of action on that, and some interesting points were made. And I always come back to sort of the point that I think both of us were making, that James Paxton can both be great and be overpriced considering the risk on draft day.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
It's bad process, but there's a really high likelihood of a good outcome, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you can like guys and not like guys, but especially in our game, everything's relative to price and cost and that sort of thing. So, I did get a few shares of Paxton early on. I did think, what was his ADP by the end of the year? He was the fringe top 150 guy by opening day.
Yeah.
Everyone kind of got on board, and we're seeing at least early on that was right, though. You know, I still don't think Paxton's out of the woods quite yet, but maybe we'll talk about that in a minute.
So we're recording this on Wednesday night. He pitches against the Angels later on. So if he gets lit up for six runs, like, don't blame us.
Yeah.
Well, one of the two. So just a real quick, Paxton's ADP was 155. So you nailed it.
Yeah.
He was
and so 155, and again, just to kind of go the other side here, I'll play devil's advocate. 155 for a guy who, obviously, the skills were there in the second half, but career high innings pitch total of 121 innings in the majors last year. Before that, 67, 74 in the majors. That's a hefty price to pay for those skills. But we'll see. You know, in terms of the early 2017 performance, obviously he's been incredible. 39 strikeouts, 32 innings. Plus Seattle unveiled that Big Maple nickname. It was hilarious too. The night they did that, apparently Paxton has a giant maple leaf tattoo on his forearm. And the night they unveiled his kind of Big Maple nickname, the picture came out. He's wearing the Mariners do a swelmet. For the player of the game, it looks ridiculous. It's like a Vikings helmet without horns.
I don't know where they found that thing. Did they like pull that off the Death Star? Like what's going on?
I don't know. So Paxton's wearing this swelmet, pointing to this giant maple leaf tattoo on his forearm. It's just classic.
He is a goofy dude. All right, let me tell you the thing I like most about Paxton. Okay. He always seems composed on the mound. Even when things aren't going well, he never looks like he's rattled by anything. Even when he doesn't get a call, I really like that mentality in a pitcher. And mm-hmm. when you combine that with his stuff, and I think the thing that stands out as well is the command of his fastball. He seems like whenever he gets in a tough count, he can always put it right where he needs to. There's not a ton of guys who have that type of fastball command that throw 100. Like he's sitting like 96, 97 in these starts, and that's really hard to do. So as we record this, Big Maple has made 5 starts, 32 and a third innings, a 1.39 ERA, 1.51 deserved run average, which is Baseball Prospectus's metric. That ranks 11th in baseball among pitchers with at least 18 innings of work. That's like Chris Sale, Clayton Kershaw, Lance McCullers, Carlos Carrasco, that territory, Dallas Keuchel. So really, really good. And just under 11 strikeouts per nine, under two walks per nine. His CFIP, which is a predictive pitching metric. If this is too nerdy and you're listening to this podcast, like, feel free to shut it off right now. Like, just say, like, I'm done. I've had it. You nerds, bug me. Turn it off.
Or just look up that picture of his maple leaf tattoo.
Oh, my God, yes.
While George is talking.
Yeah, just hit, pound that mute button, and by the time you get back, I'll be done. A 69 CFIP, which I think there's only two starters who have a lower CFIP. One, Chris Sale, which you would expect. So this guy's basically pitched, and I think he's top five on ESPN's player radar. I mean, obviously you don't expect him to be this good the rest of the year, but is it unreasonable to expect him to finish as a top 10 to 20 fantasy starter? I don't think that's crazy.
I think it all hinges on the health with Paxton. That was the one kind of drawback that I had with him entering the season. I referenced kind of the innings pitch totals earlier. I need to see him hit, you know, 180 innings, 200 innings if he can. He's got the skills easily to be a top 10, top 15 pitcher. I don't think that's an issue at all. I think with Paxton, it's just volume. Can he, can he sustain this over the full haul and stay healthy? I think that's going to be the key for him getting to that level.
Yeah, I think I read, it might have been Paxton talking about it, I think, in an interview, that they kind of changed his delivery a little bit, and that helped his shoulder. Do you remember seeing that type of story or him talking about that? Because I feel like I did during the spring, that there was like some adjustment they did. It wasn't like major, but that's what it enabled him to tap into the velocity too, was that I think they changed his delivery a little. Does that sound right?
No, that's right. And actually, yeah. I live up here in Oregon, and that's what the word was coming out of the Northwest. So that's a good sign. It's been interesting too. Paxton's, you know, I talked earlier about the cutter, how he kind of went to that in the first half of last or the second half of last year, and he's gone down on that and thrown more of his curveball.
Yeah.
This season. So his curveball usage last year was right around 10-12%. He's bumped that up almost a quarter of his pitches as a curve, and the curve's nasty. So it's good to see him. And one of the things with guys like Paxton, where, you know, you hear mechanical change or new pitch or whatever, is the league's going to catch up to that, right? It's a constant game of adjustment. So, yes, Paxton thrived on that cutter and the velo last year. Teams, I'm sure, counter to that. And then his counter punch to that is a curve. And then it's been lights out so far this year. So it's exciting to see how he's adjusting to hitters.
I think he's got the stuff to survive. Like, the start that wasn't good by relative to the others was the one against Oakland. And if you watch that game, like, he got squeezed a bunch of times on calls. I think Jaff Decker, that is who plays for Oakland. God, I can't stand him.
It is Jaff.
Oh, just another guy, Decker. God, I shouldn't say he sucks, but he struck out. Okay, he went around on a pitch in the dirt. They say he didn't go. He singles on the next pitch, and then there's an error in right, like a ball. Mitch Haniger throws a ball, literally hits the base. Like,
yeah, Haniger, yeah, for as perfect as he was, that wasn't good.
Yeah, so there were singles which weren't hit hard, and then there were errors on top of it, and things just kind of unraveled, and his pitch count was high, and it just kind of never came together. But, like, you're going to have one or two of those a year. Like, that happens to everybody. Kershaw got hit the other night. Like, it happens. So,
actually that Oakland game, George. That's the only, again, recording this. He'll probably get shelled tonight. But out of his first five starts, that's the only game he's given up an earned run.
Yeah, it's crazy.
He's been scoreless. He's faced Houston twice, once at Minute Maid. He's faced Texas and he's faced at Detroit. In those starts, five walks, no earned runs. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. So that's going to do it for Seattle Sports Radio. When we come back, we'll do our top 10 hiking trails in the Pacific Northwest.
You can do that too.
Absolutely. I know a couple. All right. So we're talking fantasy baseball with Ryan Bloomfield here on Flags Fly Forever. Mike and Brett, as you may have guessed, are off this week. We're going to talk to Jarrett Seidler a little bit later on. Well, I'm going to talk to him. Ryan will not, because he needs to go watch James Paxton get lit up. We're trying to reverse jinx him at this point. Yeah, so Jarrett's going to talk to us about Noah Syndergaard, Robert Gzelman, and all the issues going on with the Mets right now, because they're a mess. So we'll do that later on in the show. But first, we need to talk about – do you want to talk about Chris Devenski and then play our game, or do you want to play the game and then talk about Devenski? I'll let you pick.
Let's talk Devo.
Oh, God, I love this guy. All right, he's got –
what a – man.
He's gotten a lot of ink lately on the various sites. You know who they are. You know where it's coming from. Ben Lindbergh, obviously, he does a great job. One of my friends, he wrote a lot about him. He's talked about him on Effectively Wild. I know Fangraphs has done a lot on him. We've talked a lot about Chris Devenski at BP, but I want to get your thoughts, Ryan. What do you think about Chris Devenski so far? Because I have many things I could say. But
yeah,
I'll give you the honor.
You mentioned the Facts and Flukes column that I write at HQ. We deep dive into five guys a week, and one of those guys that I wrote up right before opening day was Devenski. And interesting, decision points with Houston. So Devenski in the first half was kind of went back and forth rotation pen. Devenski's second half last year was just incredible. 59 strikeouts in 53 innings, 10.0 strikeout to walk rate, and he's just gotten even better this year. Obviously, 196 ERA, a 0.5 WHIP. That's not going to hold up, but this guy is completely legit. I think the crazy thing fantasy wise, I don't know if we've seen a guy be used like this, at least for the whole season. Okay. It's going to be really interesting to see how much Devenski earns, assuming he goes, stays somewhat on this path, and how many innings he pitches and wins and saves and that sort of thing. It's going to be a real interesting stat line. I wouldn't be surprised if this guy earns 15, 20 bucks in your mixed leagues by the end of the year.
Yeah, I was talking about this once again on Twitter. I spend a lot of time on Twitter. You notice that? Rob Silver, NFBC main event champion, Rob Silver, and our good friend Alex Chamberlain were talking about Devenski a little bit earlier tonight, and that kind of sparked this conversation here. But, he's a guy where I can't envision him pitching more than, 110 innings. I really can't. If they're going to keep him in this current role and not let him start any games, and they're just going to keep this usage consistent. I mean, it reminds me a little bit of what we saw from Dellin Betances when he came up in 2014 as a multi-inning guy. But even that wasn't a full season.
No.
He only threw 80 innings, I believe, if memory serves. But we haven't really seen a guy do this. And this is the fun part of fantasy, all right? It's not a fun subject to talk about, but there's a little bit of narcissism in writing about fantasy sports, right? You want to make good calls. You don't want to be wrong all the time. And Devenski's a guy, I really regret not pushing him more. And that's because I like you said, I doubted the role. I said to myself, he's probably going to swing between the bullpen and the rotation. And if he's out of the bullpen, he's not going to be dominant enough, because he struck out under a batter per inning last year. I didn't think he was going to get enough innings or be good enough as a reliever to merit writing about as a mixed league target. And I regret that. I was wrong. That was a bad call, because he's fantastic.
A lot of people were wrong. His ADP, Devenski's ADP, was 375. And I think it was because, you just said, the role. I mean, people don't people look at middle relievers, I think, still, even in mixed leagues, less so, I think, in onlys. But people look at middle relievers and kind of write them off. And Devenski's really, people talked about Andrew Miller changing the game last year with Cleveland in the playoffs and that sort of thing. Devenski's doing it this season. You mentioned the innings pitch total. I don't know. I'd go he's already got 18 through April. So if you prorate that out, that's what? Just over
105.
15 or something.
Yeah, I think it was 105 when I did the math out. But, like, I could see him pushing it to 120 if they wanted to give him some starts. Like, if someone goes down and they need a guy, like, he's not a bad option if you can stretch him out.
It's a lot to ask, though, especially I think Houston, I mean, they're planning. They're my pick to win the AL West. And so you got to factor in, I'm sure Houston's factoring in workload-wise with Devo, a pretty hefty workload in the playoffs. So we'll see. But, again, he, at 100 innings of what, even close to what he's doing, is pretty damn sexy from a fantasy standpoint.
His numbers are like an X-Files monster. Okay, they're nuts. He's given up 3 home runs, but you know who's hit them? Mike effing Trout, Francisco Lindor, who might be the best shortstop in the league right now. That's a conversation we can have in June, with how he's playing. And then Brandon Moss, like, of all people, and that was the most random home run that's ever been hit. But that Brandon Moss would do that. His numbers, okay. The reason I bring them up is because I was looking at DRA. Today, and I referenced it with Paxton. It stands for deserved run average. If you've never heard of it, I'd suggest going and doing some research on that. You can put me on mute and then do your research. Davinsky, 0.75 DRA. It's the lowest of any pitcher in baseball this season with 15 innings. No one else is under one.
Yeah, we do an expected ERA at HQ, and not as low as that, but 1.56, which we never see. I mean, that's video game.
That's where FIP has him too.
Yeah,
but his numbers are nuts. Like, okay,
23% swinging strike rate. That's a quarter of his pitches or whiffs so far.
It's crazy because he throws like his changeup in right down the middle and just like dares you to swing at it. He's like, come on, try. And then like no one can touch it. He's striking out 16.7 batters per nine. He's issued 2 walks on the year, 34 strikeouts. So yeah, Chris Davinsky is really, really, really good. All right. Did we cover everything we need to on Davinsky? I feel like we
Yeah, did. I think so. And one thing you mentioned too, just the consistency of how he's being used. Houston's planning for Davinsky. I mean, they've got some rough starters. They've got like Mike Fiers. Davinsky's like Fiers is, you know, rotation mate almost. Fiers goes 4 or 5 innings, and then Davinsky comes in for a couple, and he's being used consistently. You're going to get 2 or 3 appearances of multi innings every week, and that's. Yeah,
you know
that's
what
good.
You know what else is weird? Like, Brad Peacock for about a 2 or 3 week stretch was like store brand Chris Davinsky. Like, he was just as good, but in like lower leverage. And they brought him in some high leverage, and he kind of stunk. So that was really disappointing. Because I kind of liked him as like this like deep guy in an AL only. I was like, oh, Brad Peacock might be somebody, and then just kind of no.
Yeah,
another swinging strike rate standout. But I digress. Since you are Ryan Bloomfield, the Facts Are Flukes guy, you're one of them. It's a team of writers who do those, correct? Like, it's a bunch of people?
Yeah, there's 4 of us.
All right. Well, too bad there's not 3, because then you could be like 3 musketeers of...
the core 4.
Oh, I like it.
4
well
horsemen.
Done.
There's a lot you can do with that.
Well, that's true. All right, so Facts Are Flukes. We're going to play a fun game, and we're going to go Facts and Flukes. I said that incorrectly. We're going to go Fact or Fluke on some polarizing hitters and pitchers. How does that sound? We'll try and work in some of the biggest names in fantasy baseball. Let's start with the number one player in fantasy. Number one on ESPN's Player Rater. And I think everybody saw this coming. Ryan Zimmerman. I mean, who didn't see that coming? It was so obvious, right? He's hitting 420 with a 358 on base percentage, 11 home runs, 22 runs scored, 29 ribs, 1 steal, which is random too. A year ago he hit 218 with 15 home runs and 500 plate appearances. So I'll ask you, fact or fluke, is it the health or that he's hitting more fly balls? Which one's the fluke, man?
He hasn't had 500. Zimmerman hasn't had 500 at bats since 2013. The start's impressive, obviously. The fly ball rate's great. He's hitting. He's making a crap load of hard contact, 42%. But I can't trust this guy to stay healthy. He's 32. I don't see guys who who have been injured their whole career suddenly get healthy. One thing, you know, Nationals are trying to shield Zimmerman, playing him, you know, exclusively at first, but because really he couldn't even throw a baseball from third base. But I would sell him. He's a fluke. He's just not going to last the whole season.
The one thing I will point out is that his average launch angle is up like nearly 3 degrees. Like he was at 9%, 9 degrees last year, and it's just under 12 right now. So I think there is like a kernel of truth in that he's healthy right now and he's trying to alter his approach a little bit. And those things in tandem have, you know, caused him to be like bitten by a radioactive spider, and this is what the result is. So you're right, it's not sustainable, but like enjoy it while it lasts, I think would be.
He's got the Gary Sanchez homer to fly ball rate from last season, 39%.
Dude, don't knock Gary Sanchez. Did you see his home
run about Gary earlier? So.
Dude, I love Gary Sanchez. Can I like be upfront for a minute? Like, I don't care. Like, he all he has to do is hit for power, and he's like a top five catcher. It's hard for him not to do that. He looks like he's motivated, and like a pissed off Gary Sanchez is a good Gary Sanchez. So this is going to be fun. Speaking of Yankees, Aaron Judge or Joey Gallo? Okay. Let me give you some numbers here just to put these in context. Judge struck out 44% of the time in 95 plate appearances last year. He's cut that to under 27% this season. He's hitting .300 with 10 homers as we record this. Joey Gallo has struck out in 153 career plate appearances. He'd struck out 50% of the time. He slashed that to 35% this year. He's hitting .205, which isn't great, but he hit his 8th home run tonight and has a .327 OBP. So which one is more of a fact and which one is more of a fluke, or are they both facts or both flukes? I don't know. You tell me. I didn't write the rules, so we're making them up.
Yeah, no, I'll play with that. I think, you know, Gallo, people forget he's just 23. You know, he's been up and down, and people have kind of already given up on him, and he's starting to do this. I think in a vacuum, I would take Judge over Gallo. A couple reasons why. They both strike out a bunch, but Judge's strikeout rate is less of a suck than Gallo's. I think also too with Gallo, there could be a you know, playing time once Adrian Beltre comes back at third base, you know, where Gallo has been playing exclusively this season, where do they put Gallo? You know, could throw Gallo in left field, where, you know, he might, I guess, platoon with Delino DeShields, I guess, is their everyday left fielder right now. but I think Judge's playing time situation safer, fewer strikeouts. The power is just obscene, and then every you know, he's the guy. I think Judge is the fact over Gallo. I think Gallo is kind of fact-ish, fluke-ish, if you want to make up a result there.
Like a bad 2-week stretch swings it either way for Joey Gallo, right? Like if he just goes on a tear where he strikes out 50% of the time, I mean, that really is going to kill his value.
Well, and that's the thing too. Yeah, with all the strikeouts, you're going to be so much more prone to slumps, and with a more competitive playing time situation in Texas, they could, you know, if Texas is in the hunt, yank Gallo during one of those slumps and he's on the bench. So
my East Coast bias is going to kick in, and I'm going to tell you about the time that I met Aaron Judge last year. Are you ready?
Okay.
So I walked in to the clubhouse because he was playing in AAA. So I go to Pawtucket, which is in Rhode Island, which is the closest AAA to me. It's the Red Sox affiliate. And they're playing Scranton, the Yankees AAA. And so Judge gets there. And he's one guy where you don't even need like to know what he looks like. You just find the tallest person in the room. You're like, that's Aaron Judge. And so he's like 6'8", right? He looks like Rob Gronkowski, but like if Rob Gronkowski played baseball, you're like, whoa, he's the tallest person I've ever seen. But like the nicest dude. And he talked a lot about like process. And I think that's an underrated element of the game, just like a player's mental state. And a lot of guys can talk about process, but Judge, I think, really believes that he's not going to change who he is. Like, he's going to be consistent no matter what the results are, at bat to at bat. And that was, like, a big key for him, was he was struggling in AAA to start last year, and he didn't try and do anything different. He kept doing the same things, and eventually it turned around for him. So I like Aaron Judge. I'm shocked that he's not striking out more. I really just am. I find it hard to believe, like, honestly, that he's so big and the strike zone for him could be so big and just not strike out. That seems crazy to me. We just haven't seen that a lot. I don't know.
Did you look like Ronald Torres next to Judge when you were next to him?
I looked like Ronald Torres' younger brother. The fun part about that sentence was I was trying to figure out the right way to say Torres in plural. But yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I've lost control of my mouth.
The one thing I will say about Judge too, with the strikeout rate, one of the things I always like to look at with the strikeouts is the underlying swing strike rate for Judge. Yeah. It's only at 11.5%, which is not bad. Yeah, it's higher than league average, but for someone with his power, that's pretty damn good. And he's only swinging at 24% of balls outside the zone. So he's actually shown decent plate discipline to go underneath that not bad K rate.
Yeah, here's a fun callback. We talked about the home run surge earlier and how it's continuing this year. Like, those two guys and some of the other young power hitters in the game, they're a big reason why. Like, them figuring it out really changes the power landscape, because you're adding, what, maybe 80 home runs combined between these two guys, potentially?
Yeah, I was going to say, you're maybe adding a pair of 40-homer guys, so.
Yeah, and there were exactly, what, like, zero a year ago? Like, there's no – there still aren't
like,
guys pushing
it was 40. Like Mark Trumbo and Chris Davis.
Yeah.
That's, for the K.
Yeah. And like Brian Dozier, but that's not happening again. So there's, yeah, it's different. All right, we got to breeze through some of these here. Chris Owings is the number one shortstop on the ESPN Player Rater. Things I didn't expect to be talking about 2 months ago. Does he have a shot to finish as a top 10 shortstop? Because he's got 4 home runs and 7 steals already. If he hits 15 to 20 home runs and steals 25 to 30 bases, isn't that a top 10 shortstop?
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to be a top 10 shortstop by season's end. He started out in 2015 was really Owings' first year. Looked terrible at the plate, no hard contact, a lot of Ks, and he's steadily improved. And he is in a pretty damn good environment in Arizona, where it was interesting to, you know, with the front office change. Adios, Dave Stewart.
Sorry, Dave.
Yeah, sorry, Dave.
Thanks for the memories.
Sorry. We didn't know how often Arizona ran all the time last year. We didn't know with Lavulo and Hazen how often Arizona would run, and they're often running a lot so far in April. They're one of the top teams in stolen base attempts. So for Owings, that is a huge boost for him. Already got 7 steals, hitting over 300. I think he's definitely a top 10 shortstop. I was real high on him. He earned, you know, mid-teens value last year, and I think he's only going to get better. One thing to watch for Arizona is the humidor, and it will be interesting to see with guys like Owings with somewhat fringe power, how is that going to affect his output in the second half? It's going to be interesting, but I do think Owings has the plate skills, the speed, and enough pop to be a top 10 shortstop. I'm buying into that hot start.
I wanted to put a buffer in between the powerful Aaron Judge, Joey Gallo comments, and then go to Miguel Sano, because I felt like putting them all together would be just too much for one. This podcast would combust spontaneously. Miguel Sano hitting .316. Wow, didn't see that coming. With a four, his BABIP is .450. just think about that for a second.
Absurd.
He has 7 home runs and 97 plate appearances coming into tonight's podcast. He's still striking out 33% of the time, but like, if Miguel Sano is striking out 33% of the time, he's a viable fantasy option, right? Fact,
fluke. I wasn't high on Sano at all entering the season with the contact, but you're right. If he's if he's striking out 30% of the time with the power profile, again, in today's environment, in today's game, he's passable with that. We're projecting a 245 batting average from Sano the rest of the way at HQ. I don't think that anything near 300 with that contact rate is even remotely possible. 450 is just nuts. But we're also projecting almost 40 bombs for Sano. So you look at another guy, 250 batting average, 40 bombs at 24 years old with kind of built-in upside. OBP leagues, 19% walk rate. So obviously league context is important there. So I'm buying the power. The batting average is a complete fluke. I think that's coming way the hell down.
This game should just be called buy and sell, because that's what we're doing on all of these players. I believe in them, just not these things. Last one for hitters. Mark Reynolds or Jed Jerko? You got to pick one. I don't understand what's happening. They're both playing exceptionally well. I didn't forecast that.
Yeah, and Jerko's especially mashing right-handed pitching early on this season, hitting 392 with five bombs against righties. I would take Jerko head-to-head over Reynolds, even with the Coors factor. It's Mark Reynolds, man. At least Jerko has shown a pulse in the past. I mean, hit 30 bombs last year. So he's my guy. I'm not buying Mark Reynolds. He's a fluke. Jerko, I think, is a fact.
Very good. I like how you were more assertive on that one than anything.
I had to go back to the, yeah.
you kicked in there. All right, let's talk about some pitchers real quick. We did Paxton and Devenski earlier, but the guy who you could make a case for has been the best pitcher in fantasy, which sounds weird to say, Ervin Santana. Through the first month of the year, he's the number two starting pitcher on ESPN's Player Radar. Five games started, giving up one earned run or less. 4-0 with a .77 ERA. What is going on there? I think it's a fluke, but
I do too. You look at one of the things I like to look at early on is level of competition, kind of who Santana's faced. And Santana broke through with that complete game shutout April 15th against the White Sox. He's faced the White Sox twice. He's faced Kansas City in his opening start. The peripherals for me aren't there. Pretty much the same guy that he's been. So, Big Irv has been in the league for, 12 years now? And the skills, the last few years have been very mediocre. The skills this year are very mediocre. His BABIP is like 130 so far through five starts, and his left on base percentage, his strand rate's up like 95%. So there's no way he's even remotely close to this. I'll go probably 4 ERA the rest of the way.
Here's a fun one. Okay, there's two guys here that I found myself picking up in every league over the last couple of weeks, and I'm interested in your perspective on them because I know how I feel about them. But both of them have deserved run averages right around 2, which puts them as top 25 starters by DRA this year. They are Jason Vargas and Andrew Triggs. Can you believe that? They are somewhat legitimate in what they're doing. They're at least in terms of run prevention. Triggs had one outing where he got absolutely blasted, but other than that, he's been kind of unhittable. And then Jason Vargas, the strikeouts are up over 8 batters per 9, 1.42 ERA. Triggs is a 1.84 ERA. Vargas 1.89 DRA. Triggs 2.12. Are these guys good? Because I feel like they kind of are in a way. In a deeper league, like, I kind of like them.
Yeah, I mean, it's all contextual. But, yeah, deeper league, of course. But I don't know. Jason Vargas, another one of those guys, mediocre through his whole career and then has Tommy John surgery, has pitched, 50 innings the last 3 years or 2 years combined, and then comes out in 2017 with like a bionic elbow and does what he's doing. I think Vargas, Do you want my it's so take? Tough to tell.
Do you want my take real quick on him?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, because I know my colleague Eric Roseberry wrote a good piece on Vargas for the Buyer's Guide, so I got to plug that whenever I get a chance because, like, he did a good job with it. But I think Vargas is perfect for that ballpark. Like, in Kansas City, like, you can hit a million fly balls. They're not going to leave the park on most cases. So it's perfectly suited for his style and what he wants to do. There's been a lot of weak contact. I mean, it's a fastball at 86 and then a change at 81. And just there's not a lot of strikeouts. I think people are just going to stop swinging at a certain point. But it's really hard to score runs off him when he has that defense behind him in that ballpark. Like,
yeah, the defense behind him, that park's that's a great point. I can't get over the velocity you mentioned. Yeah, like mid-80s.
It's Jared Weaver-esque. So bad.
Jared Weaver wishes he got that, but maybe 2015 Jared Weaver. I mean, Vargas has been painting early on, and I just think if he runs into a stretch of bad command with that mid-80s fastball, he's going to get bombed. But I'm not buying into Vargas really at all, and even in kind of mid-sized leagues. I give me the 1,200 innings of Jason Vargas as opposed to the 2017 Jason Vargas.
Wow, I'm very offended right now, Ryan. you've ruined our friendship. Andrew Triggs, give me the 30-second spiel on Andrew Triggs, because, like, I watch him pitch and I don't know what I'm watching. It's really weird. I haven't quite figured it out yet.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. I love the floor of a Triggs. He's almost like almost think of it like a Marcus Stroman type profile with the ground balls, and he doesn't give up any walks. So, or hasn't been at least.
But he doesn't really like throw a ton of pitches in the strike zone. He's
right.
It's weird.
He's got a lot of junk, and he's another guy. Okay, so one bad start. Six earned runs to Seattle on April 23rd. His other four starts. Zero.
Oh, I know. I had him for that Seattle start. That was a fun weekend for me.
Yeah. So, at least with Triggs, a little bit younger, 28 compared to Vargas, a little more upside. But I always tend to be weary of guys without the high strikeout rate, and Triggs doesn't have that. He's flirting with 90 with mediocre swinging strike rate. So I don't know. We're projecting like a 3.50 ERA the rest of the way, something like that.
I won't ask you about Mike Leake, but Ivan Nova. Okay. My point on him. I think we're reaching like this Gladwellian tipping point with him. Like, he can't continue to throw this many strikes, can he? This just seems insane. He has more. I saw ESPN Stats and Info tweeted this out, that he has more complete games than walks in his last 16 starts. He has five complete games and four walks.
Four walks.
Like, I loved Ivan Nova coming into the year because I liked what Pittsburgh did, changing his delivery, getting him, like, I think getting his head, what is it called? I'm not, like, a pitching coach, but getting him, like, more square to the target with his head so he was aiming his pitches, like, it enabled him to throw more strikes is basically what it is. And the stuff is played up as a result, but he can't keep doing this, right? This just seems nuts to me.
We'll see. This all started in the second half of last year. He had a 1.1 walks per nine over his last 90 innings in the second half last season. You're right, though. He's just pounding the zone, constant game of adjustments. You got to think hitters are going to be a little bit more aggressive off of Nova. And again, he's another guy who just doesn't miss many bats. But, you know, the other interesting thing, the Searage effect, like, I struggle with that. You know, how do you quantify that? But
hot take alert here.
Because
I hate the cop out that, like, oh, it's Searage, he'll fix it. It's like, no, that's not really how it works. Like,
no,
it's not that simple. Yes, they're it's a good environment, and I think he's a good pitching coach, but it doesn't just automatically solve all the issues.
Well, and we tend to focus on all the successes, and it kind of manifests itself into that. Who was the spring training pitcher last year for Pittsburgh that everyone was on? And
there was an Allen Webster experiment in there, wasn't there? That didn't go well.
Didn't go,
like,
well.
They couldn't fix that. Drew Hutchison this year. Mm-hmm. Francisco Liriano really fell off last year. They just I don't know whether it was they were dealing with a bunch of other things, they didn't have time to work with him. Like, you can't focus on Liriano when you got five rookies in your rotation too. There's a lot of things. It's not perfect, but yeah, I don't know. That's Nova. Let's see, lightning round here. You don't even have to give me a response. You can just say fact or fluke. Luis Severino.
Fact.
What?
Yes, sir.
Really?
Missing bats, man. That's the key.
I'm not prepared to live in a world where Luis Severino is good as a starter. I've seen too many trips.
Throwing 97. We'll see how long that holds up over the season, but it has been impressive.
Oh, you want to make a bet?
Which depends.
Okay. Well, see, I was trying to get you to agree to it before I told you what it was. All right. I'm trying to think of what the best way to do this would be. Should we do like player rate or finish, or how would you quantify this? All right, I'm gonna do Luis Severino versus Jason Vargas, but I don't know what the barometer is gonna be. Do you want to do player rate or finish?
Let's do that. Let's all do player rate.
We have our first board bet of the year,
and we don't even need to announce who we're going with.
I think it's pretty obvious. I'm gonna take my boy Jason Vargas. I've officially adopted him tonight. JC Ramirez, buy or sell?
Fluke. Well, hold on, my dog's barking. Hold on a sec.
A guest appearance here on Flags Fly Forever.
Yeah, we don't need that.
What's your dog's name?
My dog's name is Finn.
Finn? That's a great name. Yeah. My dog's name Toby, which is not as great.
And but I've had two friends who just had kids. Mm-hmm. And I need your opinion on this. Oh. Their kid's name is Finn. So do you say, you know, congratulations, that's my dog's name too? Or do you just leave that part out?
I think you just don't even bring it up. You wait till they bring the kid over, and then you just go, Finn. And then the dog comes running. And then they realize it. Yeah.
That's kind of how I've played it so far. I it sounds cool, but it's a little demeaning.
That's brilliant. I think Finn, he doesn't like JC Ramirez is what I'm hearing. He's really out.
No.
He's out.
Four Finn starts. And I are anti-JC.
Yeah, four starts. I'm not buying. Okay. Last one, Charlie Morton.
Oh, Charlie Morton.
I kind of like him.
Ground balls, velocity spike, missing more bats. I am in on Charlie Morton. Love what he's doing so far.
And it's not just a StatCast alien velocity spike either. It's a
no.
It's an actual velocity increase.
It's yeah, and it started last year, and he sustained it. I love what I'm seeing from Charlie Morton. What's his velocity? Like, yeah, he's hitting mid 90s.
It was 97 at times this year. I mean, did you see his injury a year ago? What it yeah. was? Holy cow! Yeah. Read about that. That's not fun. Ugh.
56% ground ball rate. There's a lot of good going on with Charlie Morton.
Yeah, except for tearing his hamstring a year ago. That sounds incredibly painful. I had some bad factor flukes here. They're really quick. Kyle Schwarber, he's hitting 196 with three homers. What's going on there?
I am not a Schwarber guy. That start is a fact. That start is what he's going to keep doing.
See, I think he's like, well, I didn't think he'd be this bad batting average-wise, and I thought there'd be more power. So, maybe we were wrong on Kyle Schwarber. That pains me.
He got his first catching appearance the other night.
Oh, that's a big boost. I like Schwarber. I know Brett Sayer, my colleague who does the show with us. He loves Kyle Schwarber. So, he's gonna have Brett earmuff it. Don't listen to this. Trevor Story is hitting 178, six home runs, but he's striking out 38% of the time. That's most of any regular in the major leagues. How big of a concern is that? Because I circle that one every day.
Yeah, it's a big time concern. Story was, especially given his ADP, he was like a top 30 pick entering the season. It's even worse to see it in his second year, to see the contact rate go down. It tells me that he's not adjusting to major league pitchers. They're ahead of him right now, and that's a concern for me big time.
there's a limit to how much contact you cannot make and still survive. Like, it, no matter, even if you're hitting for power when you do. I mean, it's crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about Sano and Gallo, and Story's contact rate is at or below, you know, what those guys are at. So
he's
it's
basically
tough, and he's not running either, at least early on. So
he's basically Ryan Schimpf, and you don't want to be Ryan Schimpf.
Just 69% fly ball rate from Trevor Story.
Very nice. Jonathan Lucroy. Nice. Jonathan Lucroy, last one. He's hitting 200. His BABIP is 203. He's hitting ninth for the Rangers. What the hell happened to Jonathan Lucroy? Seriously.
He'll be fine. He was okay. Lucroy was my top catcher ahead of your boy, Gary. Give me the years of skills. I love Lucroy. Buy him low. He's 92% contact. He's not striking out at all.
No, I know. It's weird.
He'll be fine.
I've never seen a 203 BABIP over more than like a few weeks. So
I know.
Give me Gary Sanchez though. You want to make two bets? I'll bet you I'll take Gary Sanchez rest of season.
Well, Sanchez is already beating Lacroix by not being in the lineup.
we'll find a creative way to do this one. I think we'll go. Let's go WRC plus from May 1st on. I'll give you May 1st. So you get this week. You get an extra week.
Okay.
You get an extra week of Lucroy. I mean, barring injuries later on. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm in on that.
Good. All right. I think that's it, Ryan. Do you have any players you want to ask me about?
What do you think about – this is a guy who, admittedly, I was so wrong on, at least so far, but I was not a fan of Will Myers.
Oh, no.
During the season, horrible second half, hitting .310 with what, seven homers now? What's your take on Myers?
Myers, I don't really understand why he ran as much as he did last year. It wasn't made clear why. He just kind of said, "Well, I felt like it," and that's not great. I don't quite know what to make of that. The strikeouts. I mean, he's not walking at all. I don't think that was something he was going to do anyway. I haven't looked at his BABIP, but I'm guessing it's insanely high. It is.
It's up near 400.
Whoa, Nelly. Okay. I didn't get any shares of Will Myers anywhere this year because it felt like he never made it back to me. Because in a snake draft, he never quite made it back to me in that like fourth to fifth round range. I felt like. And in an auction, I had a hard time paying the full freight for the steals without a guarantee that he was going to get the 20. He's only got two. He's been caught twice. That number could change. But it comes back to you're sort of the cornerstone piece, the face of the franchise guy. Do you really want to expose yourself to injury on the base paths? I always wonder that with these guys. He has the big contract now. I can't envision him stealing 20 again. I really can't. Like, it just doesn't make sense because he could get hurt and then miss 2 months and then what?
Yeah, especially this season when San Diego's – I mean, they're not in it. Why would you expose Myers to running? Glad you brought up the injury point. So, like, Myers, you know, injury-prone label his entire career. Didn't hit 350 at-bats in any of his first three seasons. Last year pops out 600.
Yeah.
You know,
unexpected.
Is he out of the woods? Is he still injury prone? It's tough to tell, but he's had those wrist injuries, but
see, I don't know where you stand on this, but I've always hated the injury prone label because like every player is an injury risk, especially with pitchers, but Myers has had some weird ones over the years. I also think getting traded a couple times also it's hard to settle in a new place. Like you've moved, right? I mean, I'm assuming you've moved
all over.
Okay. Isn't it? It's a little difficult at first. I had this point about Yulieski Gurriel too. Like he'd never lived in America. Like he's, you know, it's hard to adjust sometimes. And I think there's a little bit of that with Myers. He had some bad luck. I don't worry so much about the playing time. I worried about the steals was the main thing because you do expose yourself to injury when you run, which is what made last season so surprising that a guy with injury problems would start taking off like every time he got on base. So, yeah, I'd be concerned about that going forward. Just if he starts running again, you only open yourself up to problems.
Mm-hmm.
Any other guys? Or
what about that Gurriel guy?
He's had a fantastic little run here, hasn't he, the last couple of weeks?
I know. You brought up that point about moving it. Gurriel, I mentioned this. I wrote up Gurriel in the baseball forecaster last year.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just think about it. He was signed, in July and playing in August?
Yeah, and he hadn't played in basically over a year, I think, in Cuba, if I'm remembering his path correctly. Like, he just hadn't faced any competition. And he hadn't faced major league competition ever either. So The thing with him was, this is what kind of dissuaded me a little bit on him, was the exit velocity numbers on contact weren't great last year. They weren't quite like Billy Hamilton bad, but it was like gap power. It wasn't like over the fence power. So I thought he'd be a guy who'd hit for like a 280, 290 with a lot of doubles. I thought like that was kind of the profile we were going to get, but he's really hitting the ball hard lately. And part of that is, I think, the athleticism that he's like, he literally was the best player in Cuba in the last 10 years, 10, 15 years, right?
Yeah.
Like, you don't get to that level without some natural raw talent. So he's older at 33 years old, but there's still talent there, and he's tapping into it, and you can see it. Like, he just looks more comfortable. Like, he's got the crazy glasses on. He's doing his hair weird. He seems like he's kind of found himself, and that's
he's
a great sign.
A little more. Yeah,
I like to see that. So, Gurriel, Brett Sayre was, once again, Brett's had some good calls this year. He was in on Zimmerman. He was in on Gurriel. He's got him in a bunch of, like, the Tout and Labor formats. I mean, good for him, but, like, those were two guys where you really had to take a step back to see the forest through the trees with all the data on those guys, and I think that's what makes a really good analyst.
Being able Absolutely. To do that. They are more than just numbers.
Always keep one hand firmly on the data, though. You can't. We're not going to go off and recommend some, like, J.C. Ramirez. That's it. It's always bad.
Or Jaff Decker.
Jaff Decker. He pissed me off like twice in that week. And on that note.
Because I'm sure that was his fault.
But. Yeah. Any final thoughts here, Ryan? Or I think we're.
No, man. It's just interesting to see how everyone takes in these April stats. And let's see how it all pans out in the rest of the way. But it's fun to see what's. To see what's for real, what's not, and truly, we don't know yet. It's just been a month, so.
It's a overreaction theater.
Absolutely.
As you would say. All right, so you can find Ryan's work at Baseball HQ, and you can follow him on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan, hey, man, thanks so much for coming on and doing this. This is a lot of fun. We're going to have to do this again.
Absolutely, anytime, man.
All right, so that's going to do it for Ryan. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back. We're going to talk to Jarrett Seidler. We're going to talk some Mets, which I know is a little depressing, but we've had a lot of fun so far. Let's bring it back to reality in just a moment. We'll be right back here on Flags Fly Forever. Back here on Flags Fly Forever, joining us to talk about the disaster that is the New York Mets rotation. We're recording this as Matt Harvey is getting lit up this evening by the Braves of all teams. Jarrett Seidler, he is a staff writer at Baseball Prospectus and BP Mets. He's also a co-host of the For All You Kids podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at JA Seidler. Jarrett, I feel obligated to ask, how are you feeling tonight?
You know, at some point you just, like, get accustomed to this stuff as a Mets fan. Like, it's not – really, after, like, 2007 and 2008 and Game 5 in 2015 and Game 7 in 2006, like, there's nothing more they can do to hurt me, you know?
Well, part of this is, in the back of your mind, didn't you kind of feel this way that building a team – based around a rotation of young pitchers was risky? It's just inherently risky. Did you always have that fear in the back of your mind that this could go south at any time, even when they were successful?
Sure, like, we were freaking out in the preseason when they sold Gabriel Ochoa to the Baltimore Orioles so they could come up with the money to sign Fernando Salas. At the time, he was, like, the eighth or ninth starter, and Jeffrey and I were going, there's, like, a pretty good chance they're actually going to need that at some point in the season. Not that, I mean, Gabby's getting rocked in AAA, so that's not exactly proving the point. But, like, this depth was always really shaky. Jacob deGrom was coming off a season-ending injury. Matt Harvey was coming off a season-ending injury for which the surgery is usually not 100% recovery, at least on the first year or two. Steven Matz has never really pitched anything close to a full season. Robert Gsellman was pretty much a pop-up guy. Seth Lugo was totally a pop-up guy and an injury-prone pop-up guy at that. And Noah Syndergaard has had a lot of minor aches and pains over the years that have never actualized into, like, serious injuries. But he would always, like, need to be skipped a start or a tier. Well, he went in for an MRI, but it was clean. Or, you know, his elbow kind of hurts, but it'll be fine. And he was also coming off, if you recall, he had pitched through bone chips the second half of last season, his elbow. So it wasn't even like he had a completely clean bill of health.
I mean, only adding to that, they canceled pitch. Fox canceled pitch today, which isn't great.
Yeah, for those who don't know, Meg Rowley and I were the BP reviewers of that show, which Meg actually wrote a phenomenal piece for the website as kind of like a coda to our reviews. And so if you haven't read that, check that out. But yeah, that was like, there were like some positive signs that it seemed like the show was coming back, and then just out of nowhere, yeah, it's canceled.
Yeah.
Like it didn't even make it to Upfront to be canceled.
That stinks. so let's talk a little bit about Noah Syndergaard. We're going to get to Robert Gsellman because I actually have some interesting thoughts regarding him, and he's a guy I talked about in the preseason a lot with Jeff, so let's start with Syndergaard. I mean, he's out indefinitely. It's a partial tear of his right lat muscle. GM Sandy Alderson told reporters it's going to be a considerable amount of time. I mean, we talk fantasy on this show, but what are your reasonable expectations for Syndergaard the rest of the year in terms of how much he's actually going to pitch?
So Alderson said he thought it would be measured in weeks, not days or months.
Right.
Looking at similar injuries, 5 to 8 weeks, 6 to 9 weeks, something in there seems to be kind of the consensus. This is where I make the joke where you add the Met month in because they're going to botch the rehab, so he's going to be out for an extra month at some point. They're going to dramatically undersell how long he's out. And then, although again, they did not give a number yet, so
can I pause you for a second there? Because this has sort of been a thing I've seen you tweet about, that you don't exactly like the way in which the Mets have not been forthcoming regarding injuries and situations with players like this. Is that a fair assessment of how you feel about things over the last couple of months?
So there's like two, and this comes back into Syndergaard.
Yeah.
Syndergaard was pushed back a day last week, and when Terry Collins pushed it back, he said that he was always scheduled to be pushed back a day and blamed a bad press release. And then the next day it came out that he just went out there and lied to the beat reporters that no, he was actually scheduled for, I think it was the Wednesday start, and they pushed him back because he was having trouble lifting his arm above his head. And like, there was just no reason to do that. And to like keep the lie going, they did not tell Matt Harvey and had Matt Harvey do his 2 days before start preparation. So when they ended up having to scratch Syndergaard on the second day, they called Matt Harvey 2.5 hours before the game and said, you're pitching today.
So what is the benefit of not disclosing that information? I understand that, you know, if there are nagging injury issues or there are some things that health-wise a team is never going to disclose with the public. But when you're talking about pitchers with injury issues, I mean, doesn't it help to be more forthcoming with that information to the public? I'd assume you'd want to get out in front of situations like that rather than withhold that information.
I don't know. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I cannot see any kind of competitive advantage that would be gained from it, unless you're like desperately trying to trade for a starting pitcher to make that start, but you're not trying to trade for a starting pitcher on April 27th. So,
right.
I, you know, Terry Collins is like a real old school baseball man. Dan Worthen is a real old school baseball man. Sandy Alderson at this point is a real old school baseball man. It may just be old school baseball. You don't disclose it until you have to. That's kind of my theory.
Yeah, so the rotation's kind of in shambles right now, but one of the few remaining healthy question mark, maybe he isn't, guys, is Robert Gsellman, who we ranked as the number 17 prospect in baseball this offseason. I know that was a bold, maybe aggressive choice on our part, but the skills sort of warranted that ranking. If you look at what he did in the second half of last year, I mean, throwing the 95-mile-an-hour sinker, and he added the slider, and he looked like a guy who could be, you know, you guys talk about it all the time on the prospect team, but the mid-rotation starter, the actual number three, he looked like he could kind of fit that bill for this team. And right now, his ERA is over six, approaching seven, DRA of 4.26. And what are your impressions of Gsellman so far? Because there are a few things in the profile that I've noticed, but I want to get a sense of what you think is going on with Gsellman.
I think to a certain extent, he's just getting horribly unlucky. And I'm even going to asterisk the horribly unlucky. The Mets are running out like a really god-awful defense at times.
Yeah.
They've been running out Michael Conforto and Curtis Granderson in center field. They've been running out Neil Walker at second, who's okay-ish, with Estrubel Cabrera at short, who's kind of okay-ish, and Jose Reyes at third, who's really not okay-ish anymore. There's just like, this is like the punt defense, like old Oakland A's teams to some extent.
Oh my God.
Becoming less so now because with the Yoenis Cespedes injury, they've bumped Conforto back to left and Juan Lagares is playing more center field. But at times they've been, even now they've been running out of Conforto, Granderson, Bruce outfield. And that's, Conforto's fine in left, but Granderson in center is, Granderson wasn't great in center when he was 30, and he's 36 now. And Jay Bruce is just awful, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say when Jay Bruce is the least of your problems, I mean, I don't know what to tell you. It's not good.
So he's getting hit a little bit hard, and his blood velocity as games have went on, that was a little bit of an issue for him last year, too. So you kind of wonder if maybe he's a 70, 75, 80-pitch guy like a Drew Smiley or a Nate Karns or somebody like that. That is something that we might be seeing develop. But if you look at the under, like his DRA is not that much worse than it was last year. His strikeout rate is still there. I mean, it's a little bit down. Like the peripherals haven't declined that much. He's just giving up an awful lot of runs and an awful lot of singles for what he's been doing. And I really hate using like the defense independent thing as like a total hand wave, but it's also like 25 innings. It's not, I don't see great cause for alarm other than just the idea that pitchers get hurt at some point. And, you know, maybe he's just a 3 or 4 instead of like a 2-3 as we had projected him to be. And that happens too, you know, especially with guys. He had pop-up velocity last year. He added a new pitch. He consolidated his command all at the same time. And sometimes guys do give some of that back.
We're talking Mets with Jarrett Seidler of BP and BP Mets because they're the most fascinating team in baseball right now, and not always for the best of reasons. But we're talking about Robert Gsellman, and you hit on one of the points that I've noticed, and that's the dips in velocity in game. You know, there are points where the sinker is dipping down to 91. The average velocity is right around 93, but he still is pumping it up to 95 at times. And you mentioned that that's not a huge concern. I thought you made a good point about the BABIP right now, because his BABIP is 352. He still has like a 59% ground ball rate. So I don't quite know what to make. I think the one thing that stands out to me with Gsellman is there are times when he just doesn't seem like he's commanding his pitches that well. He's not locating where he wants to, and that's gone in and out at times on him. Do you feel that way as well? Because it feels like when he can get that sinker in on lefties and really command that pitch, everything kind of opens up for him. We saw it, I think, two starts ago where he had that pitch working. I think it was against Philadelphia, who he's kind of owned throughout his career. But Have you noticed that as well, that the command's kind of been spotty at times?
Yeah, it's actually funny you say that, because I was at that Philly game sitting behind the plate, and Jeffrey was there and a few other people were there, and we were like, wow, you know, this looks fine. You know, he's now, again, it was against the Phillies, and I guess one of the counter arguments is that he's had an awful lot of his major league success against the Phillies and the Braves, who are not, like, very good, especially the Phillies. And the Phillies are not very good in a specific way that I think he's able to take advantage of.
Right.
But, you know, the movement's there, and that can be a tough pitch to command. You know, it's a two-seamer with a lot of run to it. You know, fastball commands, like, you know, if you take 23, 24-year-old starters, a lot of them have fastball command that kind of comes and goes. It's not an abnormal problem given his point on the developmental curve, especially given that the fastball jumped last year. So he's still kind of growing into the kind of pitcher he is now, as opposed to the kind of pitcher he was, say, 2 years ago.
Yeah. So the verdict on Gesellman, long term, still very confident, I would assume, on him turning things around. I mean, you mentioned it, the DRA. I mean, it's like half of what his actual ERA is. It's kind of crazy.
Right, like his DRA last year was 4.18, his DRA this year is 4.26. In both cases, that's, I think, slightly better than league average. Right. And, you know, that's fine. That you know, when you're expecting a guy to be a number three starter over the long term, you know, if he had a bad 25 innings in July of ERA, it would, like, barely even be noticeable. But we're still at the point in the season where that stuff's really noticeable because it's the only thing on the back of the baseball card right now.
Yeah, he's gotten really panned in fantasy circles by people who aren't as plugged into the advanced sort of metrics that we have at BP. And I just think it's unfair. I think part of it is, like, good process, like identifying a player that was primed for success, but then just a bad outcome so far. So I wouldn't panic if I owned Gesellman. And real quickly, Michael Conforto, are they going to leave him out there and just let him play it and stop messing around with him? Or what's the deal? Because it seems like that's just been the case for the last couple of years. They just haven't left him alone to go play.
So there was his wrist was hurt last May, and he had a really bad 6 weeks trying to play through it, and it basically destroyed his 2016 seasonal line, especially when both the front office and the Mets decided that those bad 6 weeks meant we need to go out and trade for Jay Bruce. And that also happened at the same time that they decided Yoenis Cespedes keeps pulling stuff in his legs. Maybe center field's not such a great idea anymore. So all of a sudden, there's nowhere for Conforto to play. I don't think it's the greatest secret in the world that they were planning to send him down at the beginning of the season. If you look at how the roster was constructed, there was just no spot on the roster for him. But Juan Lagares got hurt like a week before the season, and Brandon Nimmo re-aggravated an injury in the WBC, so they like had to carry him because he was essentially the only outfielder on the 40 that was of major league quality, and he hit his way into a spot. Given that Curtis Granderson's essentially been the worst player in baseball in the first month of the season, which is sad, but he's also 36, and this kind of stuff does happen, and he's kind of turned into an old player skills kind of player.
It happened to Alfonso Soriano a few years ago. He just fell off a cliff like one day. That was it.
I absolutely love Curtis Granderson, but it's going to be really hard unless Curtis Granderson goes on one of his Curtis Granderson insane months to justify playing him over Conforto.
Yeah.
And, like, the idea that between Cespedes, Granderson, Bruce, and Duda, all of these guys are actually going to be healthy at any one given time, probably not. So as long as they're willing to play Conforto in center, which it appears they are, I think he's probably going to have pretty regular playing time. Because, like, seriously, the guy's been one of the best players in the National League, even in the limited playing time he had in the first, you know, week and a half of the season.
I'd like to see them use Conforto a little bit the way the Rays use Corey Dickerson, where you can lead him off against right-handed pitching, and you can maybe shield him a little bit against better lefties and bat him further down in the order if you want to give him some exposure against them. So I think that's the kind of role I would envision.
That's basically what they've been doing since Cespedes, since originally Duda went down and they moved Bruce to first base, and then Cespedes went down. Basically, they late scratched Granderson and just stuck Conforto in the leadoff spot one game, and he had a really good game. And by accident, they found the good process spot for him, because he really should be leading off against right-handed pitching if you look at the roster. And you look at what they're doing, it's just this complete accident that now he's the official igniter in the leadoff spot.
It's accidentally finding plutonium, creating it in the lab. You're oh, okay, this works.
I'd written an article for BP Mets a week before this happened, pointing out that the Cubs are doing something pretty similar with Kyle Schwarber.
Yeah.
And, that was kind of a thing they should do, especially given that Jose Reyes also does not look like a major league star player anymore, although he's at least starting to cheat and hit for power again, which is good, I guess.
Speaking of the Mets infield, we're recording this on Wednesday night. I hosted a chat early in the day for Baseball Prospectus, and I got this question 10 times, literally. When is Ahmed Rosario coming up, and what type of fantasy impact do you envision from him? So he's hitting .409 with a .452 on base percentage, slugging .527, 8 extra base hits, 7 steals, and 93 at-bats for Las Vegas right now. I know it's the PCL, but Rosario is a guy who shot up our prospect rankings last year, and it looks like the batting average is sort of the carrying tool. He's got some speed. I wouldn't anticipate a lot of power, but as someone who follows the Mets situation closely, when are you expecting them to actually give Rosario an everyday opportunity?
When is the projected Super 2 call-up date?
In a week or two, I think.
I think close. It's later than that. The safe harbor is somewhere in, the end of May, early June. The Mets have historically waited a couple weeks past that just to make sure, but it sure looks like that's going to be around the time. They'll give you, he has to work on defense. We like our hitters to have a full season in the upper minors because he was promoted to AA midseason last year. You can hit .330 in Vegas while being a marginal major leaguer. You can't hit .410 anywhere while being, if you hit .410 in AAA, I don't care what the run environment is, you're probably a major league player. They had kind of made – the field staff had made rumblings during spring training. Wow, wouldn't it be nice if we could take this guy north? Obviously, they couldn't take him north because, got to get that extra year of control. And then after you get the extra year of control, you got to make sure that he's cheap down the road too, because it's very important here. Not winning ball games when you're struggling to stay in the race. That's not that important. Jose Reyes has had a really hot week. That took the media pressure, I think, off of call-up Rosario now. So I think it's probably going to buy him until the Super 2 deadline, assuming neither Cabrera nor Reyes gets hurt. Fantasy impact, right now he's a hit tool first guy. We do project that there's going to be some power that comes. He's still got a little projection in his body, and he's got really good bat speed. He hasn't hit for much power yet, but he could be one of those guys that kind of grows into 15 or 20 home run power, in his early to mid 20s. Your optimistic projection might be Francisco Lindor with only really good defense instead of Gold Glove defense.
Oh, man. I made that comp in the chat today. I was we were saying a lot of these things about Francisco Lindor a few years ago, that we don't think there will be much power, but we're projecting some. So I think 12 to 15 home runs, being generous, I think that would be, once he grows into that, reasonable, right? On a yearly? Yeah.
You're hoping that he's a plus-plus hit, plus or plus-plus run. I think this is a guy that's going to steal significant bases in the major leagues, too. He could be a 20 stolen base guy as well. He's what we call a 65 or 70 runner, so he's a very fast guy. And he was not that 2 or 3 years ago. He's developed his physical tools in ways that were perhaps not entirely expected at the time of signing, right, which is why he shot up the prospect list like he has. All of a sudden, before the 2016 season, he just started hitting, and he hasn't stopped yet. Until before that point, he was a really toolsy guy, but it was pretty much all projection.
isn't it really hard to increase your speed grade? Like, I mean, like, to become a better runner, that doesn't happen very often. That's a weird one.
So apparently he, like, just really didn't train and do lower body stuff until the offseason between 2015 and 2016. It's really not that uncommon in other sports. It's just a little less common in baseball because you usually don't do speed training for baseball. But, like, football players, that's not that uncommon, I don't think.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap up here by talking about Sixto Sanchez. You were there with Jeff and you saw him in Hartford, I believe, last week, right?
It was in Lakewood. I've seen Lakewood. Him for two starts now, yeah.
Okay, give me the Sixto Sanchez experience. Take me through it.
Unless he suffers some horrible injury, he's going to be pretty high on our midseason list, I think. Sitting 92 to 99, touched 100 a couple of times for us. Potential wipeout breaking ball. Potential above. He was throwing two separate changeups, both of which had potential to be above average pitches. Extremely athletic, given that he's only been pitching for like a year and a half, because before he was signed, he was a shortstop prospect. Which is like one of the all-time great misses by his trainer down there. Like, dude, come on. You know, this is so the flip side is he's listed at 5'10", and he's not really 5'10". So he's like a really short righty. But at some point, you know, you're throwing 100 with the wipeout breaking ball. Like, who cares?
That's a great point. So excluding guys like, I'll say, Brent Honeywell, Josh Hader, who are right on the precipice of a major league call-up. Now, Sanchez, you'd say, is, what, at least 2-3 years minimum away, right, at this point?
Unless they decide to, like, move him quickly as a reliever. But, yeah, he's never pitched more than, like, 70 innings in a season. He's being limited to 5 innings per start. He's in low A. I think he hasn't turned 19 yet. So, like, best case scenario, maybe late 2018, but reasonably 2019 or 2020.
Yeah, so excluding those guys who are kind of on the verge of making the major leagues, you know, where is he ranked relative to the rest of the pitching prospects in the game? Because I think of guys like Anderson Espinoza, that type of class, and he seems like one of the more intriguing names among that group right now.
Yeah, I mean, I would put him right there with Espinoza. Sandy Alcantara, who's kind of a similar type of pitcher, but has already hit AA for the Cardinals. Riley Pint would be kind of a similar kind of pitcher. And these were guys that mostly ranked in the 30s and 40s on our non-fantasy 101 coming into the season. So I think he's going to pop up there. And then, you know, Michael Kopech's another one of these kind of pitchers.
Yadier Alvarez. There's a bunch of guys in that range.
Jake Rome. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot, but pitching prospects will break your heart. But I definitely like what I've seen from Sixto and what you guys have been putting out there on Twitter regarding him. So very cool stuff. Jarrett, hey, thanks for your time. Really appreciate it. And I hope things turn around for the Mets here and we can have you on and discuss some happier themes.
In the time we went from recording this podcast, Matt Harvey went from giving up 3 runs over 3 to giving up 6 runs over 3 and a third. So, yeah.
It's not great. Yeah.
Not great, Bob. Not great.
Well, I got good news. Ahmed Rosario is on his way relatively soon, so you at least have that to look forward to. Jarrett Seidler, what are you working on now? What do you have going on?
I've got a piece on Alec Hansen, who is actually the guy that Sixto Sanchez was facing on Sunday. So he was kind of like the B-side. I've got that coming up. You know, just kind of whatever comes. A lot of times I don't know what I'm writing until like the Monday, Tuesday of that week because I end up seeing guys over the weekend or something. I will probably put something out for BP Mets relatively soon. I should probably write something on Rosario specifically because, you know, it's kind of getting to the point of absurdity. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. So follow Jarrett on Twitter. He is at J.A. Seidler. You can follow his work at Baseball Prospectus and BP Mets. Jarrett, thanks for coming on. Really appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me, George.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break and we'll come back and wrap up the show. And we're back. Thank you for listening to episode 131 of Flags Fly Forever. This has been a Baseball Prospectus Fantasy podcast. I want to thank my guests for coming on, Ryan Bloomfield of Baseball HQ and Jarrett Seidler of Baseball Prospectus. Don't forget to subscribe to the one-year premium membership to readbaseballprospectus.com. I'll have my free agent watch coming out this week on Friday. Don't miss it. Sign up for a super premium membership. You get exclusive access to the Bat Signal. It's our personalized fantasy answering service. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes. Brett Sayer and Mike Gianell will be back next week. We'll talk expert fab. We got a bunch of good stuff lined up for that show. If you want to follow me on Twitter, I am at George Bissell. So until our next show, I want to thank everybody for listening. And so long, everybody.